Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I don't have keys yet. I am not officially a member yet, so I am standing here as one of Don's constituents.
Mary Peltola prepares to be sworn in as Alaska's sole member of the U.S. House. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, September 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Kenai Peninsula Borough confirms harassment allegations against outgoing Mayor Charlie Pierce.
We're balancing, trying to not interfere with the mediation and trying to give the public as much information as possible.
Those stories and more on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help stop aquatic hitchhikers by remembering to clean boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud, drain bilge, ballast, and buckets before leaving the area, and dry equipment before using it in a new body of water. Learn more at stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Tomorrow, Mary Peltola will be sworn in as Alaska's sole member of the U.S. House. You can watch it on C-SPAN at 2:30 Alaska time. Today, the Congresswoman-elect was meeting with her new staff and fielding a flood of media requests from national and international outlets. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Peltola did her first set of interviews in the doorway of what was Congressman Don Young's office, across the street from the U.S. Capitol. It'll soon be hers, but for now, it's locked.
I don't have keys yet. I am not officially a member yet, so I am standing here as one of Don's constituents.
Peltola was elected in August to fill the remainder of Young's term. Alaska's sole seat in the House has been vacant since he died in March. She is drawing an unusual amount of national media attention as the first Alaska Native person elected to Congress, and even more because of her special election win over Sarah Palin, a former Alaska governor endorsed by Donald Trump. Peltola says she was surprised to find she was even recognized here on the street.
There was a young man who said, "Whoa, did you just win the seat in Alaska?" And so we got a selfie, and it was really sweet.
Peltola is in Washington with her 7 children, 2 grandchildren, 2 sisters, and her husband. The day before the swearing-in is filled with tasks, big and small. She has to pick up a special lapel pin that identifies her as a member of the U.S. House, allowing her to waltz past security all over the Capitol. She has to start a series of COVID tests to accept an invitation to the White House to watch President Biden sign a bill.
And I am going to be taking my 16-year-old to make sure that he has a suit that fits.
While she holds the seat, Peltola will also be campaigning for re-election in November. She'll be on the ballot with Republicans Sarah Palin and Nick Begich and Libertarian Chris Bayh. Anchorage resident Brian Gouvenier happened upon Peltola as he was walking up Capitol Hill from the National Mall.
I came around and I said, "Oh, there's Mary Peltola. I didn't even know she was going to be here." And then, wonderful surprise, I have just sent a message to my wife. She says, "You're so lucky."
Gouvenier, an independent, is in D.C. while his wife attends a conference here. He says he was impressed with Peltola and the civil tone she set for her campaign.
We're cheering for her so much. So much. I think this is a big task, big responsibility. I know she's somewhat nervous, but that's okay. We're cheering her to do this job for all Alaskans.
On Monday, Peltola quickly ticked some items from her to-do list. By afternoon, she had her pin and access to her office in the Rayburn House Office Building. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Kenai Peninsula Borough now says mayor and gubernatorial candidate Charlie Pierce was asked to consider resigning from office after an employee filed workplace harassment claims against him and a law firm found them to be credible. The borough disclosed the new information at a special meeting on Sunday. But as KDLL's Sabine Pooks reports, it stopped short of releasing specifics about the allegations or the internal investigation.
In late August, Charlie Pierce announced he was resigning as mayor to focus on his bid for governor. And he's doubled down on that reasoning, even amid rumors of a potential workplace harassment claim against him. But now, for the first time, the borough's confirmed the existence of allegations against Pierce. During an emergency meeting Sunday, the borough assembly released a statement that said Pierce was asked to consider submitting a voluntary resignation as part of a resolution to help the borough avoid a lawsuit. The assembly also agreed to pay mediation costs up to $10,000, according to the statement. Assembly President Brent Johnson said Monday it's important to release the statement to be as transparent as possible without compromising a resolution to the claims.
We're balancing trying to not interfere with the mediation and trying to give the public as much information as possible.
The borough already confirmed last month it had hired Anchorage law firm Ashburn & Mason to conduct a confidential and internal human resources investigation in July. In the new statement, the assembly specified that the investigation looked into claims made July 11th by a borough employee against Pierce. The statement does not go into any further detail about the allegations. It says because there was no external complaint filed in court, the claims are investigated as an internal matter by the borough. The contracted law firm, meanwhile, provided its report to the borough July 26. The statement from the assembly says the firm corroborated the complaint and found the claims made against Pierce to be credible. On Sunday, the assembly considered releasing that report to the public. Borough attorney Sean Kelly cautioned the decision was not one to take lightly.
These actions could impact the finances of the borough and the ability of the borough to adequately investigate personnel matters confidentially.
And after an 80-minute executive session with the attorney, the assembly agreed to keep the report private. This is not the first time the borough's mediated workplace complaints against Pierce. The borough settled with two former human resources directors over bullying and discrimination complaints in 2019 and 2021. Juno radio station KINY obtained and published copies of the settlements showing a total of $267,000 in cost to the borough. $150,000 in a settlement with Stormy Brown and $117,000 from a settlement with Kim Sainer. Both are no longer employees at the borough. An appropriations request for a third payout wouldn't necessarily come before the borough assembly, Johnson says, since the borough already has an appropriated claim reserve built into its budget.
As long as the amount is under $250,000, the assembly doesn't have to approve the money.
Pierce is not stepping down as mayor until the end of the month. He was not at the meeting Sunday and has been a no-show at recent gubernatorial debates, too. He's maintained repeatedly that he resigned to focus on his campaign for governor. He's also been vocal on Facebook about his qualms with the recent appointment of Mike Navarre as interim borough mayor. Navarre served in the seat twice before and was appointed by the assembly last week to fill in while the borough moves toward holding a special election for the remainder of Pierce's term. During public testimony Sunday, several members of the public said they thought the meeting, announced just 2 days before, was an attempt to divert attention away from that decision. They alleged the appointment bypassed the public process. Assemblymember Tyson Cox, who put Navarre's name forward for the interim seat, said he hoped the statement about the harassment allegations showed the urgency of making the appointment.
Some of this urgency within the borough has been since that investigation started. There have been a lot of uneasiness within the borough itself with employees. And to me, it felt like we needed to decide on something to move forward.
The assembly's next regular meeting is September 20th. That will be the last meeting while Pierce is in office, though he's already said he will not be in attendance. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Joseph Hazelwood, the captain of the Exxon Valdez oil tanker that ran aground and caused one of the worst oil spills in U.S. history in 1989, has died. The New York Times reports Hazelwood died in July at age 75 after struggling with COVID-19 and cancer. The Exxon Valdez grounded on Bligh Reef in March 1989 and spewed nearly 11 million gallons of oil into Prince William Sound. Currents and storms carried the crude over 1,200 miles of Alaska coastline, killing seabirds, otters, whales, and fish. It took years for the fish numbers to rebound following the spill. Hazelwood was ordered to pay $50,000 in restitution and spend 1,000 hours in community service. The grounding, along with other oil spills in 1989 and 1990, prompted passage of the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, which strengthened how the U.S. government responds to oil spills. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how one woman is raising awareness of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
It's a forever thing. It never goes away.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
September is National Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder, or FASD, Awareness Month. FASD is an umbrella term for a list of symptoms that can result from prenatal alcohol exposure. One Anchorage woman's personal and professional experience with FASD has led her to join a unique national effort to bring awareness and reduce stigma over the condition using hand-painted rocks. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
On a recent Thursday afternoon, Karen Lomack is walking around Midtown Anchorage with a stack of rocks painted to look like red shoes.
Let me see. Maybe my biggest one. So pretty. Look at that.
She tucks one next to a bunch of gravel, its bright crimson shine standing out amongst a sea of gray and white. Lomack has painted many of these herself, sometimes taking hours. Her favorite of the bunch is about the size of a discus, painted to look like your average sneaker.
I cannot bring it back with me. I need to hide it. It's too beautiful, right? I don't want to keep it for myself. I want to share it with others.
On the flip side of the rocks are several hashtags, prompting those who find it to look up information about hashtag Stone Soup Group, Lomack's employer that specializes in working with special needs children. Also written is hashtag Red Shoes Rock and hashtag FASD Alaska. Red Shoes Rock is a project part of a national push to get communities talking about FASD, the idea being that a bright red shoe is pretty hard to miss. For Lomack, it's a project that hits close to home. Lomack is Yupik from the Yukon-Kuskokwim community of Akiachak. She grew up with FASD, but didn't know for years. When an aunt of hers finally told Lomack that her mother had consumed alcohol while she was pregnant, she says it explained a lot.
I had meltdowns, right? Whether they were in the home, in the school, in the community, and it just, like, it happened wherever, everywhere. And I did not have the skills to calm myself down.
Lomack says prenatal exposure to alcohol can lead to a host of impacts to children.
Executive function, right? Attention, focus, sensory, adaptive living, and communication, social skills, visual perception, fine motor skills.
While there isn't a lot of solid research into how widespread FASD is, the state of Alaska estimates that conservatively up to 50 in every 1,000 U.S. children has some form of it. And it's estimated Alaska's rate is a little higher because the state has a higher rate of alcohol misuse. Lomax says growing up, she didn't receive a lot of information about how serious prenatal alcohol exposure could be for children. She noted that some medical providers previously believed that a glass of wine was fine for pregnant mothers. Lomack's personal connection to FASD became more prominent when two of her children ended up showing signs of the condition, too. She says explaining to them that they were exposed to alcohol while in the womb was the hardest thing she's ever had to do.
Telling them that I did consume alcohol when I was pregnant with you, and, you know, explaining that I did not do it on purpose. I did not know that I was pregnant, right? And it came with a lot of anger. It came with a lot of resentment, It came with guilt.
Lomek has been sober for just shy of 12 years and says she's been able to work with her children not only to address how FASD impacts them, but also to confront the negative stigma associated with it.
One of them is able to say, I am impacted by FASD and not have any embarrassment, no shame, right? And it's a really good feeling.
Now, Lomek works with community members to spread awareness of FASD. For those not immediately impacted, it means describing how alcohol can affect pregnant people and those trying to become pregnant. For others, it means accepting that FASD will always be a part of who they are.
It's a forever thing. It never goes away. But with the right support, right, in place for the individuals who they care for, or if they are the individual who is impacted, they can be successful.
Part of that outreach means getting those Red Rock shoes out into the public for community members to find. This is the second year Lomek has done the project. She says there are dedicated Red Rock pages on social media where people can post about where they're placing rocks, showing how widespread the outreach is.
I'm hoping that they do not keep the rock for themselves. What I hope that they do is they rehide the rock, right? And take a picture of the rock that they're rehiding and post it in their rock group page.
In the meantime, Lomek says Stone Soup Group is hosting a community rock painting party this Saturday, September 17th, at the Fairview Rec Center in Anchorage. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
A Dillingham hunter was mauled by a bear on Friday. Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Tim Desmain said in an email that 40-year-old John Castile was hunting up the Nooshigak River when he was mauled. Castile's aunt Marjorie Nelson says Castile came upon the bear while moose hunting. The bear attacked and Castile called out to his hunting partner, who shot and killed the bear. Castile's partner sent a satellite message requesting help, saying that Castile had injuries on his arm and leg. He was conscious but couldn't move.
They had a nurse with them and other hunting parties that helped stabilize him and control his wounds. He stayed out in the wilderness for 4 hours, laying on the tundra. But, you know, those people, the hunting party that he was with, they started a fire and they tried to keep him warm and keep him conscious and awake until the helicopter came and got him. It was a rough Friday night for us.
It was dark by the time the helicopter arrived. Nelson says the group shot flares into the air to show their location. The helicopter took Castile to Dillingham.
The whole time, John was conscious. He was awake during this whole ordeal. And after they got him stabilized, cleaned up, they got a medevac out of Dillingham and sent him to Anchorage.
Castile has deep wounds on his leg and arm and was in the Alaska Native Medical Center's critical care unit over the weekend. Nelson says he went into surgery Saturday morning. It lasted for about 8 hours.
He's still in a lot of pain, but they're trying to manage that pain right now. He's pretty overwhelmed with, you know, what happened to him, and totally understandable. I can't imagine. I can't, you know, it's overwhelming to me.
She doesn't expect recovery to be easy and says Castile may have to undergo additional surgeries. Consumer goods have been washing up on beaches on the Gulf of Alaska. That's 1,200 miles from where a cargo ship spilled more than 100 shipping containers off the Olympic Peninsula on the Washington coast last year. John Ryan with Northwestern News Network reports from Seattle.
Trash washing up from far away has long been a problem in Alaska, but some high-value debris spilled in October has beachcombers cheering. Kathy Peavy went beachcombing with her son on Southeast Alaska's outer coast.
I go to pick him up off the beach, and I see he's got a Yeti cooler. And we're just like, what? And we get all excited. Brand new, beautiful Yeti cooler.
One bush pilot found more than 20 coolers by flying low over remote beaches. Plastic stuff from kids' bike helmets to suitcase sets has been returning to land. It's unknown how much stuff from the Zim Kingston cargo ship is still floating around. Yeti, the publicly traded billion-dollar company, did not respond to multiple requests for comment. I'm John Ryan reporting.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 45 years. More at alyeskapipeline.com. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
The labor shortage hitting the nation is particularly pronounced in Alaska. The rate of unfilled positions is about twice the national average, according to recent data. Healthcare, food service, and hospitality are among the hardest hit industries. But in Unalaska, you can see it playing out with another group of employees, tugboat workers. KUCB's Theo Greenlee has more.
It's a clear and warm summer day by Unalaska standards, and a tugboat, the Millennium Star, is pulling a barge along the city dock.
We're shifting the Illiliak Bay barge. It's got 78...
Chris Eisler is at the helm, towing the Illiliak Bay barge. It's full of 78 containers of fish product they hauled over from the Trident plant on the neighboring island of Akutan. Eisler is regional manager for Centerline Logistics, a marine transportation company, and he's the captain of one of their tugboats, the Millennium Star. But it took him a long time to climb that ladder.
I actually started as the cook 27 years ago, and I worked my way up to...
Got your stern on the last pad, so you're all good, okay. You're in position.
Roger. Worked my way up from there to deckhand, and then went mate, and on to captain. And then... now I'm actually the captain and the regional general manager of the operation here.
Stories like Eisler's are pretty typical in the transportation industry. But right now, the industry is having a tough time. People just aren't applying for those entry-level jobs. Eisler says they've had one opening for more than 4 months, and they've barely had a handful of applicants.
We did hire one guy, but we've been running without a cook on here for the last two trips. It's not normal.
An entry-level job as a cook can start off at about $80,000, working around 6 months out of the year. Eisler says tons of people used to apply, but not these days.
There just aren't people applying for jobs.
Kimberly Cartagena works for the company that owns the Millennium Star, Centerline Logistics. They're among the top three petroleum transportation companies in the nation, with operations on the East and West Coasts, the Gulf, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, the Panama Canal, and Alaska.
No matter how many places we posted in, no matter how many places we go recruit from, there just aren't people applying for tugboat jobs.
By now, the Great Resignation is old news. Millions of U.S. workers quit their jobs since the onset of the pandemic. But a recent study from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce suggests it's more of a great reshuffle. That's because most of the people who resigned are getting rehired somewhere else. And Cartagena definitely sees that.
During the pandemic, you know, a lot of people, you know, they prioritize being with families. So for our particular operation, people live on the tugboat. So we lost them for various reasons during the pandemic. And some people just completely switched to a completely different industry.
It's not hard to see why a lack of mariners can be a huge problem.
If you don't have enough crew members, then the vessel can't move.
That means a cruise ship can't get fuel, or a grocery store has empty shelves. Cartagena says it hasn't come to that yet, but they're relying on the existing crew to work more hours, longer shifts, and to run skeleton crews.
While we have a shortage in people applying for the positions, we definitely have our long-term employees who have been here for so long and are helping us get through.
People can enter the industry with relatively little experience or formal education. Someone fresh out of high school can earn their Merchant Mariner credential and start off on a career track. And that kind of accessibility has the Millennium Star crew getting creative.
We've started going through our friends. Like, hey man, do you want a freaking job? Go get your MMC and your TWIC card, you know?
He says another captain liked the work ethic of the person who was remodeling his bathroom. So he offered him a job.
And so he said, hey, you know, you should think about getting into the industry. And he got his TWIC card and got his MMC. And we're going through the hiring process with him now. So, yeah.
In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
An Aleutic artist from the village of Larsen Bay on Kodiak Island is one of this year's Rasmussen Foundation Award winners. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports Janissa Johnson was recognized for her work in folk and traditional art.
Johnson is one of 25 Alaskan artists recognized with a project award from the Rasmussen Foundation. She says it's an honor to be named among this year's winners.
It was completely unexpected. You apply for something and you know there's a chance, right? But then when it actually happens to you, it's extra exciting.
Johnson is from the village of Larsen Bay on the west side of Kodiak Island. She now spends part of the year in Anchorage. Johnson was recognized for her work with sea otter pelts. She started hunting otters about a decade ago during summers spent back in the village.
I hunted them as a result of their population. And there's just an outrageous number of them in the Larsen Bay, Uyak Bay area.
Federal law allows Alaska Native people who live in coastal areas of the state to harvest marine mammals like sea otters for subsistence purposes or making handcrafts. Johnson is Aleutic and says she started hunting sea otters to protect other subsistence resources they were decimating, like mussels and clams near Larsen Bay.
It was never really my intent initially to start making stuff with the fur. But once I got back my first batch of these canned pelts, I realized that there could be some cool things made with them.
Now she stitches together their fur, creating scarves and pillows and other custom items. She says she sells them to tourists who fly into Larsen Bay's hunting and fishing lodges during the summer. Johnson says, art aside, she wants to encourage her 5-year-old son to continue the lifestyle and traditions of subsistence harvesting. He started joining her on hunting trips.
Reactive harvesting, right? You see a lot of otters, so you harvest more. If their population declines for some reason, you harvest less. And so that just led me into the art.
The Rasmussen Foundation Award comes with $7,500 in prize money. Johnson says she's already used the grant to purchase a more advanced sewing machine, and she's planning on traveling to Southeast Alaska to shadow a master skin sewer there, too. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Wesley Early in Anchorage, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, John Ryan in Seattle, Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, and Kirsten Dobroth in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Emmert. Katie Anastas is our producer. I'm Lori Townsend. Casey Grove will be back tomorrow. Good night.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.